The following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, pothead.
Look at the game change.
If you want to battle, it's either that you will or you won't.
Hey, you know, you're not a bad-looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
Bullshit. You didn't convince me. Let me see your real war face.
No, I thought you said that you are right, Spider.
Hey, man.
I appreciate you reading my book, because most of the time when I give people a copy, they don't really get to it. In fact, I have family members. I don't even think my wife's read my book yet, so that means a lot to me.
I was so grateful you gave it to me. It was at the Santa Ana tournament, and that was my first tournament ever as a coach, like rolling in with a team, weigh-ins. Mm-hmm. By the way, the one thing about coaching that nobody wants to tell you is like, say goodbye to Saturdays and Sundays.
No kidding.
Like, Sinbad's got a joke, like, you ever root against your kids just so you can sleep till 8 on a Saturday? Uh-huh. Like, miss the shot. That was pretty nuts. Like, weigh-ins at 6:30 a.m. You're like, oh, I remember this. But the book's great. Yeah. A Saint in the City, True Stories of Champions Living in the Barrio. Scott Glabb is your name, if anybody cares. Sorry about that. G-L-A-B-B. I'll turn my phone off. We're really high-tech around here. The book's exceptional, and I really want anybody out there to—they will, because I put my name on it. Go get this book; it'll be up at jmoore.com. And what's great is through coaching, the people that like follow me. They're now interested in wrestling, you know, because I put up screen grabs with like red arrows for bad and green arrows for good. I'm trying to get it to like a mass media where everybody can process it level. Yeah. So you'll be happy people buying his book.
Oh,
it's really
it.
Fascinating. Being from New Jersey, towns out here, Coach, have always fascinated me. California, period. I didn't realize Santa Ana was like the hood when you started there 27 years ago.
It's the hood in Orange County. Yeah, it's pretty rough. In 2000, it was ranked number one city in the nation for economic hardship. So that would include education. Like 56% of the people in Santa Ana don't have a high school diploma, 24 years and under. The most overcrowded city in the nation. I got kids that are living in apartments with 2-3 families, 2-bedroom apartments. So
that's not like the hood for Orange County. You're describing the definition of. We're not saying anything negative about Santa Ana now. I was just there. It was really nice.
Yeah. Oh, you were? Where were you at?
Were you handing me the book, you wacko?
Oh, yeah. Well, our school's nice because our school was built in the 30s.
Yeah.
And Santa Ana is the oldest high school in Orange County. 1899 is when it started.
Wow.
But the building you were in is beautiful. I mean, the architecture is great.
I went for a drive to get some like Gatorades and waters, and I went, all right. Kept my head on a swivel after a couple blocks. Well, so I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a block away from the city jail and the courthouses and stuff. So.
But it's a city I can get a read on. Like, if I'm in a place like Santa Ana, if I'm someplace, if I'm down at like Watts Towers, if I'm whatever, like Lower East Side of Manhattan. Like, there's just something. Maybe it's a wrestling thing. You just go, oh, I vibe it out. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Long Beach. Can't get a read on Long Beach. I have no fucking idea what Long Beach is, what it's about. Like, it's rich people. Then it's like drifters. There's a kid on a skateboard. Mm-hmm. There's a barbershop. It's like, I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Santa Ana, I got. Like, I dug it. There's an incredible pride there. Mm-hmm. When you started coaching there, the first match, what was the score of the first match?
So we were in the Sunset League. So back then it was Huntington Beach. It was Marina High School, Fountain Valley, Edison. It was all those beach, Huntington Beach schools, all the schools that were really tough with in their sports. About four of those schools were
big
ranked.
Big schools, too.
Yeah, big
Keep
schools.
Keep talking about it close.
And so the four of those schools in our league were top 10 in the Orange County. So we had to wrestle Huntington Beach High School, and they beat us 76-0. So, and then Westminster beat us 53-8.
Hold on, don't come off that 76-0.
So 78 is the most points you could score. So only two of my varsity guys didn't get pinned.
And that's what I really liked in the book. It's pretty early in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas an actual fan, that's a strong word at this point, actually comes up to you and goes, hey, look on the bright side.
Right.
It could have been 78-0. Mm-hmm. I don't think you took much solace in that.
No. It was pretty humiliating, to be honest with you.
And there's nowhere to hide, like wrestling.
Nope. It's just that kid and somebody else out on the mat. And you're right, there's nowhere else to hide. Like, I was listening to your thing today, Save Olympic Wrestling. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I mean, now, you remember?
Let's put it up, actually, in the middle of this. Here's what Coach is referring to. I did this on my radio show back in the day. And I remember it was 2 weeks into my radio show. And I had been thoroughly vetted to replace Jim Rome, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Jim Rome changed the game, man. And I'm, like, driving to work, and it was just one of those quick news tickers, like, yeah, they're thinking about the IOCs, thinking about removing wrestling from the Olympics, uh-huh. along with this, ping pong, my sister's ass, and the bottled water coin toss, whatever. And I went, that's my monologue. And I'll never forget my boss going, you want to lead 160 markets with Save Olympic Wrestling? Are you out of your mind, my man? I said, this is why you hired me. And thank goodness he let me do it. And that was all just from my heart. Like, nothing.
That's what I was going to ask you. Was it? It wasn't scripted? You did that off the top of your head? That was incredible. I mean,
here's it's about 3 minutes long. You guys can scooch forward if you wish and hear me and Coach Scott Glab talking about what it's like to actual coach wrestling when somebody's homeless. Gilbert Melendez, UFC champion. It's a really good book. A Saint in the City. True Stories of Champions Living in the Barrio. Scott Glab. Here's a... Well, about time you guys heard this. Make it viral. Here you go.
Wrestling is going to be dropped from the 2020 Olympic Games. No other sport teaches young men and now young women discipline, self-reliance, fitness, nutrition. The true meaning of you're only hurting yourself. That never happens in any other sport more than it does in wrestling. I got to tell you guys, this is a disaster. You have to understand where this reaches. If you take wrestling out of the Olympics, you're effectively stripping it from college and high school. There is no pro. There is no payoff to a wrestler. That's what separates a wrestler from the pack. That's why wrestlers have chips on their shoulders. That's why they don't have friends. That's why they're spinning in cups trying to cut weight, because they're doing work. And I remember my wrestling coach, Jim Sauer, used to say, basketball is a game, football is a game. What we're doing here is life. Try to get your 15-year-old son to clean his room. Try that. Now I want you to get that same kid and tell him he can only eat chicken breasts and spinach, and every once in a while gorge himself on some fruit, and get up when it's dark out and run 5 miles before school. And then when he's at school, he's going to stay at school, go to a wrestling room and grind it out. It's an amazing sport. It's the purest sport. It's the solo sport. It's a monastic life, the life of a wrestler, running alone, working with a team certainly, but working within that team structure, you are crushing it every day. You are testing yourself. And when you get uncomfortable, when you get exhausted, that's when you got to push through. It is life itself. When you are in a wrestling room and you're exhausted and you feel like you're going to throw up,
There's still a guy trying to take your legs out. And I got news for you, America. We live in a world. If you go to a job, someone at your job is trying to take your legs out. It's the most indicative sport of what you go through on a daily basis. Wrestling is the only sport that really gets to the core of the actual man, and the IOC is going to take it from you. The reason you wrestle in high school is to get a scholarship to wrestle in college, and the reason you want to be so great at college is the payoff, Olympic gold. It's a sport where there is never money involved. And we talk about guaranteed contracts. We talk about how the unions are ruining the sports. You know what wrestlers are doing when all that is happening? Working. Working harder than you and I ever know what work is. We were degenerates. We were bad kids. And because we got in a wrestling room and a guy taught us a bunch of takedowns and a way to defend ourselves, we had purpose. We had direction. We had focus, which became uber focus, which became hyper focus. Wrestling is the single greatest, most important thing that had ever happened to me in my entire life. Hey, I weigh 140 pounds, you weigh 140 pounds. We know the exact same moves. We train the most, but who trained the most when nobody was looking? That's the guy that's going to squeeze out a 3-2 win. You cannot take wrestling from us. These are the guys that are in it for one reason and one reason only: to get their hand raised in front of 14 parents in Booton, New Jersey, when it's freezing cold outside. Don't let this happen. Tweet and retweet and call the IOC. Tell them, safe Olympic wrestling.
So that's that, and thank you for your kind words.
Yeah.
Gilbert Melendez, you've had incredible successes from the absolute worst beginnings imaginable, aside from a point, 2 points rather.
Right.
The thing with Gilbert Melendez is the way he fought in the UFC, you describe, that's how he was in the wrestling room. There was like a switch. Right. It was just a, you write about it in the book. Do you mind if I read your words to you? Some people get real heebie-jeebie about it.
We have a philosophy that came from an assistant coach that helped me called Break 'em and Take 'em. So that was it. You take them down, let them up, take them down, let them up, take them down, let them up, until you break their will, and then pretty much do what you want with them, or pin them, or continue to take them down and let them up.
And it's probably the best workout of your week, too.
Right. And so Gilbert kind of got that mentality. You know, he still says break them and take them. Got that from high school. So, and that was why they nicknamed him El Nino, because he just keeps coming. He doesn't stop.
I'm wearing my Santa Ana wrestling T-shirt right now.
Looks good.
I'm aware it really means a lot to me.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
We should talk later about the currency of T-shirts in a wrestling room. Nobody really understands it. One of my assistant coaches used to say, "Glab, they either have it or they don't." I didn't agree with him. I think it can be a skill taught and learned. However, sometimes I think he may have been right. One wrestler that had it I coached was Gilbert Melendez.
Right.
I agree with you. It can be coached. To me, when I coach, I'm more of a psychologist, and I got to empty that bank vault. All the shame from childhood, all the preconceived conditioning. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
You're out there to get your gazelle. Take him out. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Take him, break him. Do it. But Gilbert, you said, just had it. He just showed up with this incredible switch.
And it's funny because he's the nicest kid. His parents did a great job with him. He's a fantastic human being. But yeah, he just turns on a switch, and he's a beast, and he's relentless.
And so when he's like,
he's a great kid to coach.
Well, yeah, it makes you look like a genius.
Yeah.
And when he's 14, he goes to a different school, and he's not thrilled about the program. And then he winds up, you wanted him the moment you saw him wrestle.
Well, of course, you know, any kid that lives in Santa Ana and just competing when they're young, I mean, we call them age groupers or phenoms, but kids that start when they're young. And he just did a little PE unit at a school. Their PE classes did like a little wrestling unit for a couple weeks, and then they have a tournament. And that's where I met him when I went to the tournament. But yeah, he ended up going to the brand new school across town. And then his mother told me this, which isn't in the book, but I think it is. But anyway, she said, you know what? It was really heartbreaking to show up at school to pick him up. And he says, all I want to do is wrestle. And the coach leaves at 3:00 every day. And all I want to do is stay after school and compete. And he knew that that's what we did. I leave that room open till 5:00 every day.
I just sit out
and hang out in the room, and I just let those kids roll around and wrestle until about 5:00.
that is in the book. And immediately it threw me back to like 1988 New Jersey, where the light in the gym would be on. And I learned my senior year, oh, it's open.
Uh-huh.
Like, they should let us know this. Because
yeah.
my way of cutting weight was I would just take a basketball, dribble and run from my house, about a half uh-huh. mile. And in the gym, I would just go back and forth and do layups by myself because it's mindless.
Right.
But it is a lot of running, some jumping.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, the fact that the coach went home is the only reason he even fell in your lap, because there was like a sixth period, I think, wrestling. Right.
Sixth period, athletic period, yeah.
With a little, yeah. you're making my point for me. So there's mm-hmm. athletics, sixth period. Part right. of that athletics is soccer. Part of it's football, flag
right.
football. Part of it's four-corner soccer. Part mm-hmm. of it is lacrosse. Mm-hmm. And then this month we're going to do wrestling. And out of that comes Gilbert Melendez, who when he goes to the mm-hmm. wrestling team, the coach goes home, as is his job and right to do.
Right. You want to know where he was going? To his MMA practice. I'm not kidding.
So he was a student himself?
Yeah. He was going to... He would leave right at 3 o'clock.
Well, I think that's cool.
Shut the doors, and he was going to his own MMA practice, and little did he know he had an MMA champion right there in his midst.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So Gilbert's thing was, I want to wrestle well after school's over.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know any kid that... Like, I feel that way now at 47. Yeah. But it's because I realize its value more than I did then.
Right. And to keep up with the Joneses in Orange County and Southern California wrestling, you pretty much have to have a year-round program. And you have to have that six-period athletic period, because I'm with those kids year-round. I'm with them all year long. Maybe a little time in August I get off. But other than that, I'm with those kids 5-6 days a week.
There's something in the Gilbert Melendez chapter I found interesting. He said his father was watching his match, which was rare for Santa Ana.
Oh, yeah. It's very rare for parents to show up to wrestling matches to support their kids.
Wrestling matches, I actually have seen that now. I don't mm-hmm. know if it was systemic of the socioeconomic, like maybe a father not being around at all.
Oh, there's a lot of that on my team. There's a lot of kids that don't have any fathers around. In fact, my 126-pounder said, how do you spell dad, Glab? And I go, D-A-D. And he goes, no, G-O-N-E. Gone. You know.
And
so,
like, do I laugh or cry?
We laughed.
Yeah,
he's that kind of kid.
If you don't laugh, you do cry.
Yeah.
You sent me a text about, you know, I said, is there anything else you want to promote, or is there a website, is there a camp? You go, no, I just like to talk about the book and about mm-hmm. what it's like to make a difference in people's lives.
Yep.
And actually, I'm paraphrasing, because I know you would never say that specifically about you are making, you still use words like trying to make a difference
yes.
in people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a time, Scott, where you've simply paused and let the magnitude of what you've done in, and let the good in.
I guess those moments are when I've been inducted into the Wrestling Hall of Fame for California Chapter, National, and the California Wrestling Hall of Fame. It's at those moments where you reflect and realize, you know, I did make a difference. But today I'm still trying, and there's so many kids... I don't give up on kids unless they give up on themselves. And there's a lot of kids in my program.
Not true, and we'll get to it later.
A lot of kids in my program that I should have kicked off and other coaches would have kicked off. But I just hold out hope for these kids that they're going to make some kind of change in the future. So, but the hard part is I can't reach them all, and I think I can sometimes.
You're smarter than that, though.
Yeah.
You're smarter to think you can actually flip each single kid. You're
yeah.
too intelligent of a guy. I'm not speaking for your heart, uh-huh. which is enormous. But for you to actually think each guy, he'll never go back to shooting speed between his toes. He'll never roll dice. He'll never get in fights with the cops again.
Yeah.
You don't really. I don't believe you, because that's in the book. That's one of the questions I had. I don't believe that you're that naive.
That I'm going to try to save all of them?
That you can. You said that, you know, you mm-hmm. want to be able to save all
right.
of them. You
mm-hmm.
you have to know going in, it's a carnival game, and you're going to lose.
It is, but I don't know which one I'm going to lose.
Oh, wow.
Which kid? You see what I'm saying?
I do now.
Yeah. Like the kid 4 years ago, probably the most troubled kid I had in my program, probably the hardest kid I've had to deal with in the last 15
Bubba.
Years, is still there.
Bubba?
Bubba, this kid...
Nobody was harder than Bubba.
Was one of the worst, because Bubba liked to fight. This kid was just drinking, smoking pot.
At Wayne's,
last
too.
Year, yeah. Last year, he thought he had got 2 girls pregnant in a month. I'm just... It's endless with this kid. And he's homeless right now, so we're still helping him out. And he's still coming around. But he made it through 4 years, and that class had 30 kids, and I ended up with 10, and he's one of them that still stuck around. So with
4 years at Santa Ana, like
4 years wrestling.
So yeah. Did he graduate?
Well, we're gonna see.
Oh, he's like a really young guy.
He's a senior this year.
So what fascinates me about the book is what you're up against is a homeless guy showing up to the wrestling room every day, and mm-hmm. you and I have the same mindset. I tell the kids, I want you happy way more than I want you to wrestle,
mm-hmm.
and I will never lie to you.
Yeah.
Never. You need me in your life. The guy uh-huh. that will never lie. Is this going to hurt? Yes.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt. You know.
Right.
But a guy that's like homeless showing up to the wrestling room, you want him happy. You want him to have some guidance. Like, when I can't wrap my mind around that. I don't think the listener can either, a million of them, because we're all lamenting the wrestler that just didn't go all the way.
Yeah.
Like, you gave 98%, and I knew you were giving 98%, and you admitted it to me 10 years after you graduated. You got guys that are, like, dope fiends, homeless guys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The impossibility of what you've pulled off is amazing. So this guy's, like, homeless in Santa Ana. He's still enrolled in high school.
Yes.
But your room is what kept him tethered to the academics at all.
Yes. It's a haven for those kids like him. It's the only safe place. It's the place where he's going to get two free meals a day, breakfast and lunch. He knows that somebody's there to look out for him and take care of him. So it makes sense when you think about it.
Oh, it makes total sense, because mm-hmm. all anybody wants in life is to be seen, recognized.
Right.
And like you as a kid, you talk about your dad being abusive and very loud and scary.
Yeah.
So I can put, as a life coach, I can put together the very linear pieces of why this is such a passion to you. Because you get to behave the way you wish your father had behaved your entire life.
Exactly.
And you get to do it all day, and you get to do it under the craziest circumstances and energetic stress imaginable.
Yes.
So when a guy becomes UFC champion, like Gilbert Melendez, who likes to bang, by the way, there's nothing pretty about it.
Yeah.
It's not a submission, dude. If you can be, sure. You write in the book about actually being so nervous.
Watching him fight.
Crawling out of your skin before Diego Sanchez.
His very first fight, he was able, when he crossed over from Strikeforce to UFC, they gave him a title fight with Henderson.
Yeah.
Benson Henderson. So it was up in San Jose.
I got no problem with the decision, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I'm an enormous Benson Henderson apologist and love.
You know what? I read about him, and he's from Washington. I'm from Washington State. In fact, I did some subbing where he went to high school, not during the same time. And he's a Christian, and I thought, I like what he stands for.
I like that a toothpick magically appears from his mouth in the middle of a fight. You never know. I can't believe I'm telling you this.
No. Haven't seen that.
Watch the fight with Gilbert, like halfway through, like
get out
in between rounds. So just go like,
like
right after the fight, the toothpick. He's got a toothpick.
No
in his
way.
Mouth. Yeah, why would I make that? That's a weird thing to make up.
Yeah, I'll have
That's
to.
That's how
it
cool
out.
He is. Smooth.
Yeah.
So you talk about being so nervous watching Gilbert fight.
Yeah, it was weird because I can imagine. You know, his mom doesn't even watch him fight live. She's never seen him fight live. She only watches the recordings. That's how nervous she gets. But. Yeah, you don't think you will because he's not, flesh and blood, and you don't think you'll get nervous.
But I think he is. I think there's like a body of Christ thing there, the Corpus
true.
Christi of it all, and you are a Christian, and I commended you at the end of the chapters having a little bit of, not even verse, just there's a parable for each chapter for each kid.
Uh-huh.
And I asked you why you didn't do more so, because you wanted the book to be more palatable for people that aren't particularly Christian.
Right.
And I just love that you don't back away from your faith, and I love that you just, when you just said about Benson Henderson being a Christian, I'm mm-hmm. a Christian, you're a Christian, wouldn't mm-hmm. you like to be a Christian too? Corey's a Christian. I think there is flesh and blood there with Gilbert, because if we're going by the lineage of you're doing what you wish your father had done, Gilbert Melendez is the best case scenario Scott.
Okay.
This is how I could have been.
Yeah.
If somebody loved me and saw me and guided me and gave me encouragement instead of being super loud and screaming all the time and making it, my mom's super terrified and I'm super terrified.
Right.
So in a way, maybe that's you in there. So the palpable fear you had was, I hope I do okay.
Right.
I mean, it's a bit trippy, but
Mm-hmm. His father is an amazing man, and he was always there for Gilbert.
God.
And
oh, Gilbert's father.
Yeah. Gilbert.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
And Gilbert's dad wasn't one of those parents that put a lot of pressure on him. He didn't, you know, get upset with him, win or lose. He just stood alongside and supported his son, and his mom's great. So, yeah, he has, kind of be envious. He had a great father and mother that did exactly what they're supposed to do, and he grew up to be a great man. He's got two sisters. They're fantastic as well. So
I love you, man. Mm-hmm. I do. Like, straight up.
Oh, thank you.
I love you. And when you gave me this book, that was my first tournament, and you wrote in this book, so you were on the go. Jay, glad to see you're involved in the sport of wrestling. Keep making a difference. The kids need you.
Yeah.
It never dawned on me in 100 years that any of these private school, Catholic, you know, mm-hmm. school, wealthy kids needed me. It's an elective thing. They can leave whenever they want. And I haven't thought about it to this moment, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I just remember when I read that inscription at the gym, I kind of froze. I wasn't really sure why. And now I know why. Mm-hmm. Because you telling me right at the beginning, I was like 3 weeks into coaching, these kids need you. I was like, okay. I did a cool video on YouTube.
Those kids have problems too. They're different problems than the Santa Ana kids. They might not be homeless, but who knows what's going on behind those closed doors with those kids as well.
But of course they have their own problems.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you can email me at morestories3737 and I'm gonna lay into this here and do some intuition work on you.
Okay,
because I see you, man. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about Bubba. Hooey.
Yeah.
Morestories3737 is where you email me. My dear Jay, my son is Tyler, the person who sat closest to the stage when you performed on March 3rd. At South Point Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. You called him out for not seeming to enjoy the show. I just wanted you to know that he really did enjoy your show. Unfortunately, he was diagnosed a few years ago as having a pretty severe mental illness, which typically manifests in a flat affect. Your engagement was at the right level. At one point, I believe you were even on your knee, so you're eye to eye with him. He felt special when he spoke with him, and you backed off before it became too intense for him. Thank you. It really did make this his evening special. My husband and I are back in Massachusetts, and we're so proud that, I don't know if I said the kid's name yet, so I'll leave it out, recently graduated from UC Santa Barbara. As you can imagine, it was a difficult road. He did it, though, on his own. This past weekend was to celebrate that accomplishment, sharing with friends who live in the LA area. Your show and your engagement with him made this a special occasion. Thank you again. Sincerely, Laura and Chris, last name omitted because they should have their privacy. This guy sat, he looked like a kid, by the way. He was like 25, 26, 28, mm-hmm. right in the front row and always in stand-up, just that one fucking sourpuss, arms folded, not even looking at the stage, just staring straight ahead like, whatever, whatever.
Does that throw you off a little bit?
Yeah, it does,
when you're a comedian?
Because it's an overt, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just staring at you. They're not looking at you.
Even though everybody else around you is laughing.
Because they're right in the front. If he was in the second row, I wouldn't even be able to see him.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's like when somebody heckles in the front row and only you can hear them, and they heckle. They're having a ball.
Yeah.
So you can't even call them out. Because, as Buddy Hackett once said to me, never yell at a guy because he's having a good time. So, like, some guy will just go, I know, yeah, right, I know, Honda Accord, Ronda Rousey, like, just nothing, just absolute non-sequiting shit, an hour in, you go, shut up, and you have to explain, have me in Orlando, I have to explain to the back of the room what's happening, because they don't know anything's going on.
Yeah.
They just think I'm, like, you know, off my rocker, which they might anyway.
Is it okay to ask you what your best comeback is with those hecklers?
Hey man, be quiet because I don't want you to get thrown out.
Oh really? So you're
because now it's on the club and I'm on his side.
Oh,
like bro, you have to be. You know what? Fucking kick him out now. Like at the fifth time.
Yeah.
I tried to save you.
Uh huh.
But I realized, be quiet, man, because I don't want you to get thrown out. Mm-hmm. So let's be cool. And they're like, oh okay.
So you don't even try to burn him like some comedians.
Well, there's nothing to burn. They're not telling me I stink.
Yeah.
But I got a few doozies. Why don't you be quiet before I go to the trailer park and kick over your house?
Right.
Yeah. You know, there's.
Yeah, I tell kids in class, I don't come to McDonald's and bug you while you work, so just leave me alone.
Comics like to take it up a few notches. Yeah. Look, when you're working, I don't go downtown and slap the dicks out of your hands away. Since that's what comics would say because we're awful people. this guy had his arms folded and was just stewing. But guess what? I applied all that to him. He had a mental disorder where everything is flat and affected in his face of just no expression whatsoever.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it until this email. And I had forgotten about this dude, too. So I'm very happy.
How long ago was that?
I just made all that up. I'll be honest with you. Oh. No, it was March 3rd.
Recently.
A month ago, over a month ago. Hmm. And it's interesting because you don't know the time the audience is having. I remember a show in Tempe, Arizona. I was wearing a suit. I used to wear suits on stage because I was so dirty. I'm like, I'll wear a suit and tie, and it'll give me this much leeway with how filthy. I mean, it was disgusting. Mm-hmm. And I'm on stage in a suit and tie. It's this huge room in Tempe, Arizona. And the crowd, I'm like, the entire hour, I'm going, these people suck. What the hell's happening? I'm like, but don't say anything. Because when you do TV, if you just keep smiling and nodding, people at home have no idea. There's an applause button, you know?
Yeah.
I said goodnight, I got a standing ovation.
Huh.
They were watching the show. Like when you watch TV at home, you don't go, oh, this is the greatest. Yeah, you rock, Big Bang Theory guy next to the sun. You just watch it, right? And you talk about it the next day. It was just one of those things. So this guy I didn't lay into. I just had, obviously, an exchange with him. Mm-hmm. And I actually remember him going, I am having a good time. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's hilarious. I remember the guy going, I am having a good time. But like really pissed off.
Yeah.
And that's a Will Ferrell sketch, the guy with no affectation. Thank you, Tina. A little bit softer now. A little bit softer now. A little bit. He's like talking about that song from Animal House. So thank you very much, Laura and Chris.
Don't miss the debut episode of The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner and his very first guest, Adam Sandler.
I was shooting Little Nicky and my father came to the set. You heard about this new Krispy Kreme donut? And then I'm eating like two or three and talking to him and he's like, how many are you going to have? I said, that's it. And he's like, you do that every day?
Download new episodes of The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
So your dad, you strike me as a guy with good reason to be, you're moving very quick, but you strike me as a similar as me. You strike me as lonely. Like there's a loneliness. You walk alone a bit, but if you're growing up in an abusive home, that makes perfect sense to me. And it could be no. Don't agree.
What's a boy want? You know, a boy wants a father and a mother, and that's the way it's supposed to be, and he just, you know, he is a good father when it came to, you know, not drinking. He would take me hunting. He'd take me fishing. He built me tree forts and stuff like that and bought me mini bikes. But the drinking, he was a mean drunk. So he would come sit on the edge of my bed. And it's funny, Jay, I must block it out or something. I can't remember anything specific he'd say. All I remember is crying and that I disappointed him. So I had... Growing up, I had these feelings, I'm not worthy, I can't measure up, I have a difficult time with rejection. I didn't ask girls out on dates for fear of getting turned down. I had a hard time asking girls out when I'd go out dancing, asking a girl to dance because rejection.
It's handsomest guy, too.
Yeah, it's just funny how just those little moments in your life just dictate everything else that you do and everything that you say. And I kind of look back on that and I was naive. I was kind of weak. I didn't stand up for myself.
Hold on. You're a kid. It's never the kid's job to stand up to the parent.
Well, I mean,
it's the kid's job to be shielded.
Kids, like, you know.
All right. But I mean, if your dad tells you you're a piece of shit, you take that out with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm letting you off the hook and you got to do that too for yourself.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for all that, you wouldn't have this insatiable passion to be. Let's call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. You're one of the most successful high school wrestling coaches that have ever lived. 27 years? No.
Thank you.
Bullshit. You have to know this. The records and the state championships and the CIF championships and Gilbert Melendez and the UFC, guys are actually not homeless because of you. They go to school because of your wrestling room.
Right.
That's not subjective. You're one of the most successful coaches at, like, fuck Bear Bryant. where he sits, and take Saban with you, and take Urban Meyer with you, because they don't have guys shooting speed and rolling dice and doing all this kooky stuff.
Yeah.
You do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just call it like it is. How many guys have you sent to state? Like, I had four guys go to state from Palisades. I was like, this is amazing. This mm-hmm. is a ride.
Yeah.
What was the least year you had after being up and running 3 years into your program? Four or 5 years in?
There's 2 years I might not have had a state qualifier. But in Southern California, we have 300 schools that compete to go to the state meet. And so
what's the most you sent in a year?
Oh, seven.
How many times have you sent seven kids? How many weight classes are there?
14.
And you send half your varsity roster to state. And to go to state, you have to win your CIF.
Yeah, you have to place top. Back then, you had to place top eight at Masters. So we have a league, top three in league, go to CIF. And then CIF, the top five, go to Masters. And now, today, the top nine from Masters go to state. So they call our Masters a meat grinder because 300 high schools are drawing into one tournament. So
well,
I think
now
we
you
had,
have to take first in CIF. In L.A. you do.
Right. In L.A. you do because it's a smaller section, less schools in L.A.
Who is the greatest wrestler, success-wise, only speaking, you know, wins and losses, you've ever coached?
Well, the kid that I had this year was a state champion. So it was our first state champion in the history of the school. So the first, and I think we started wrestling in the 50s, the late 50s.
So that, now we know the real reason you retired.
Oh, the real reason?
No, now we know the real reason.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, you got to go out on top.
28 years, I'm out of here.
See ya. Uh-huh.
See that gold medal stand? Yeah. Uh-huh. Play the music, Toots. Yeah. Here we go.
So
good for you.
Uh-huh.
You were there 27 years, Santa Ana?
28. This is my 28th year. So, and I was at Marina High School, which is in Huntington Beach, for 2 years. And originally from Washington, I was up there for 3 years.
So if you were like Huntington High School, do you think your success rate would have been much higher because the resources, the kids aren't homeless, they're two-parent homes mostly?
I think when you have a program that has parental support and you have parents that are making sure their kids are showing up to practice and making a huge investment in that kid and that program, those kids are going to show up. When a parent is laying down a couple $100 for you to wrestle on the weekends or to go to a camp.
Would you be a more successful coach?
I think that's where God wanted me. I think if
same
I
question. I'm gonna keep asking. Would you have been a more successful coach if you were at Burbank High School?
No, probably not.
No way.
Mm-mm. So
God put these opportunities in front of you.
Right.
It's beautiful. Maybe wins and losses go out the window at this point.
The last
place
I wanted to teach and coach and live is where I ended up. So
You were with a gal or something?
Yeah, I had a girlfriend and I couldn't find it. I went back to my old high school to try to get a teaching job there, and my high school wrestling coach recommended me, but I was 24, 25, and they went with a guy from the junior high, and they said,
hey, 26?
No, he was in his 30s. He paid his dues.
Whoa, big shot.
Paid his dues. That's what the athletic director said.
I hate that shit.
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy, when he was like running for one of the first things he ran for, his whole campaign was, I refuse to wait my turn.
Yeah, I like that.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, they shot him.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard the news. You say in the beginning of the book, A Saint in the City, quote, I want you to realize, this is for the reader, I want you to realize that you are here on earth for a purpose. Do you take advantage of it, or do you walk away and think of what could have been done or what might be done next time?
Uh-huh.
It's hard for me to wrap my mind around every single person on earth being here for a purpose.
Really?
I ran into some real assholes out there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's their purpose.
They just never found their purpose then.
Or maybe that is their purpose.
Yeah, true.
You're from an asshole academy? You ran?
Uh-huh.
I want you to realize that you're here on earth for a purpose. Do you take advantage of it? He's asking you, the reader. So I'm asking the listeners right now. You're here on earth for a purpose. Mike, Kelly. Kelly, absolutely. I'm going to Haiti with you. Weird time for Corey to find that out. In June, we're going to Haiti, Corey.
Yeah.
Maybe not you, but I'm going with Kelly. Pete, everybody that's listening, you know who you are. Landon, yes. You're here for a purpose. Are you taking advantage of it? Your first thing that you coached, that 76, what was it?
76-0.
76-0 ended with your heavyweight chasing the opponent away with a metal folding chair.
So I had a Samoan heavyweight that was...
Hold on, I sound like really an old car.
Chasing a heavyweight opponent away, Ed, with a metal folding chair.
Yes.
Johnny.
Yeah, thank you. That's my name. Thank you. Scott Glab, everybody. Metal folding chair from a Samoan. Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting stuff.
He was a big kid, and he was pretty successful, and he got pinned by them. And
a
so,
non-Samoan.
Yeah. Oh, and so he picked up the chair and chased the kid and then threw it across the mat. And at that time, we were losing, so it didn't matter if I was kicking anybody off because it wasn't going to make a difference, you know. Wins and losses. It's a lot tougher.
No, it makes a pretty big difference if you kick the guy off the team or not. Because, Scott, let's not.
But it's a lot tougher when you're successful and you got a kid like that. And now it's kind of a little harder.
I think the hardest thing of that, and you already know this, is now when somebody gets out of line. Red Auerbach once famously said, don't make rules, you have to enforce them.
Yes.
Now you got some guy who wrestles 126 with a 500 record. He's 10 minutes late to practice. You're laying into him and he's like, the fucking Samoan threw a chair.
Right.
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
So I'm late. Whatever.
Right.
Did you run into that type of problem?
I have. I run into it all the time. In fact, you're going to be really disappointed. But the 220-pounder that won state, he...
That's this year?
This year. The kid that won the state championship, he... The week of state, he worked out a little bit. And then the Wednesday and Thursday before state, he just played games with the rest of the team that wasn't going. And he...
Why am I going to be disappointed by that? He won a state championship.
Yeah, but he didn't... While all these other kids that are going to the state meet are drilling their asses off,
he won
and working
Scott.
Hard.
He won. Shut up.
I know, but it,
that's what he does.
In the sport of wrestling, people are disappointed. Like, you are a state champ, and you didn't work that as hard as I am.
Well, I don't think anybody outworked him in the room leading up to those 2 days. Oh, damn!
I think.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing, isn't it?
He's just, I call him an anomaly because there's other kids on the team going, I don't understand this. I don't understand.
It is usually hurt. Nothing fell off my
lap. Other kids on the team just don't understand how he keeps winning and winning, and we're working our butts off. And this kid's just walking around the room talking to people and gets his workout in, but it's not like anybody else's workout.
It's going to be a lot of quick matches
it's
for this
a
guy.
20-minute bathroom. Hey, coach, I got to go to the bathroom. He's 20 minutes, and he comes over, and then he's got to tie his shoe. He's got something else. Oh, I got to find my headgear. Pretty soon, by practice over, halfway over.
And why are you laughing, Corey? Because he's describing somebody, you know, yeah. about acting and stand-up.
Oh.
And it enrages people.
Like that it comes easy to you?
I've never given 100% anything in my life, ever.
So it just
athletics,
comes easy
girls,
to you.
Athletics, stand-up, acting. Like, now I see with stand-up. But oh my god! But I don't have any bit. Look at this empty ass notebook. There's no bits written in here. Carrying my tools with me.
Man, you're lucky.
No, I've forgotten 2 hours of material, Scott.
Oh man.
You said something in your book that really hit me about when you wrote openly about your depression.
Uh huh.
And that was
horrible.
I'm very. You basically said I'm very selfish. I behave very selfishly when I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. And I thought it sounded very incongruous to me. Because it's a sickness, as you know.
Yeah.
So if you had bronchitis, you wouldn't go, I bother everybody when I cough. It's very selfish of me. What? Can you give me an example of selfish? Depression made me a very selfish person.
Right. So I had a girlfriend, and she stuck by me, and we had known each other in junior high and high school. And then we started dating when I got out of college. And I got depressed soon after we started dating, but she stuck by me. And she says, I know your true colors, Glab. I know your true colors. You know, I remember how you were in high school. And so she kind of just stuck by me.
What does that mean, though? Like, what was happening like, that she knew
because
true colors?
I was miserable. I didn't want to go out. I would want to stay home, and she'd want to go to Halloween parties. And she was very outgoing. Well, she lived here, and I lived there, and she was a flight attendant. So on her days off, she would fly up and see me. So I got to see her, you know, every week practically.
So this is before you even moved here?
Before I moved here.
The depression was there.
Yeah.
A long time.
The depression hung with me for a...
So where's the selfish behavior while being depressed?
Well, I want to go see, like we wanted to go, she wanted to go see the Patrick Swayze movie, Dirty Dancing. No, I don't like dancing. I think that'll be stupid. I don't want to go to that movie. We're going to go to this one. It was that kind of stuff. That kind of being selfish. Never... We're going to do what Scott Glab wants to do because I need to feel better about myself. So everybody else.
Yes.
Everybody else, just sit on the sides. We're going to do what I want to do or I'm not doing it. Bottom line.
Depression made me a very selfish person. Are you a selfish person? Yes or no only? Right now?
No.
Okay. Do you think not wanting to see a fucking dancing movie is a selfish act? You're not exactly going out and getting grain for the greater good of the tribe here.
When she's... when she's bending over backwards and doing all these things and flying down and visiting and kind of looking out for me, yeah, I could bend a little bit and go see a movie that she wants to see once in a while.
Did you not see the movie because of your depression?
No, I just now didn't think talking. It would be...
So depression didn't make you a selfish person. You were a selfish person that suffered from depression.
I'm going to say
did depression
the
make you not want to see the movie?
Not that particular movie, but...
All right, so let's go case by case here.
Depression made me selfish in that I was only going to do what I wanted to do to feel better because there was very few moments during that depression where I had moments where I was happy, where I was laughing, where I felt good. So... we're going to do what Scott Glab wants to do, or I'm not going to do it.
So I'm going to lay off the gas here for a second. Uh-huh. Normally, I would just zero in here and just obliterate the person's ideas and morals, but you're legit. You're true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing, like, for me, that you were so depressed, and the few things that brought you happiness, to pursue them in your mind is selfishness. Hmm. Everybody else sit on the sideline. They could have joined you in whatever you chose to do. And mm-hmm. maybe you didn't share with them the level of your depression.
No, you try to hide that.
Which when is you, that's, when you, now that's selfish.
Yeah. So when I went to practice, because I was coaching up in Seattle at the time, when I went to practice, I had to put on a mask. I had to put on a different face. Those kids didn't know I was depressed, that I was suicidal, that I was living in this dark room most of the day, and I would just get up.
You walked around with a dark room all around you.
Yeah, and I'd just get up, go to practice, and boom, hey, it's me, Scott Glab, and the amazing coach, and the funny guy, and hey, and we're having a good time, and then go back and just sit in my room and be miserable.
Scott, I can't believe you're saying this. This depression's very new to me, and I don't mm-hmm. really have it right now mm-hmm. in memory, actually. I'm realizing that in real time. I haven't really been depressed in a while, thank God.
Yeah.
But I was so, like, I had just pissed my bed, and I didn't care because I wasn't getting up. My dog had shit in the bed, and I didn't care because it was far enough away from me and didn't smell. And Coach Dan Lashley, and I love you, Coach Dan, from Crespi Carmelite, texted me. I actually thought if I just stay here, I can actually know what it's like to be on a hunger strike, so I'm not going to get up to eat.
Yeah.
And I'll be tripping balls from not eating.
Uh-huh.
So let's go. No TV, nothing, right? I look at my phone. I need you to start practice for me. And okay.
Yep.
Bang. Out of the bed.
Weird.
No
huh?
choice in it.
Yeah.
And I got to practice, and I never thought about. And I came home, I just changed my sheets, and I felt great.
Well, because I think we need to be needed.
Yes.
Those kids needed you as much as you needed them.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the same way I felt when I got to Santa Ana. Wait a minute. These kids need me. I need them. This is a win. Win-win.
What makes coaching great for me personally, and it is all about me, that's why we're here, you know,
mm-hmm.
is as an alcoholic in recovery, an addict in recovery, I like to give with conditions. I want you happy, but I'd be a lot happier if I was the reason you're happy. But if I'm the reason you're happy, how come you haven't told me
uh-huh.
how happy I make you? That's kind of fucked up. Like, I thought this guy was down, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah, I sent you a letter in the mail. You didn't even tell me you got it or not. I got to ask you if you got my card.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, I did, thanks. I'm like, fuck, what do you mean I did, thanks? That was a nice gesture, but that's not giving. So mm-hmm. when I coach, there's nothing they can give me back. And that was my first experience giving with no conditions.
True.
They can't give me anything back.
Not really. I mean, what I expect. Well,
you could make weight once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Make weight and show up to practice. Don't run off with your girlfriend after school.
Your assistant coach is wrong, I think. They either have it or they don't. We're predators. Our eyes are in the front of our head. By predator prey, we're predators, period, which means we have it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be on Earth. We'd be extinct.
True.
If we didn't have it.
But just think how rich we could be if we could figure out how to turn it on in a kid, how to find it. Because I had a kid for 4 years. He was varsity the last 2 years, and this kid worked so hard, and he's just the greatest kid in the world. And I had him watching videos, and I was doing everything I could to help him mentally, and he still struggled and just finished not the way any of us wanted him to. And I just...
How did he want... What were his expectations? Did he ever tell you?
Well, yeah, place at CIF. And he
maybe you don't know what his expectations were.
Well, I know his expectations were to place at CIF. He was a league champion, but we had a pretty, you know, I think he only had one other kid in his weight class at league.
Heavyweight?
No, he was 170.
Oh, wow.
And he There's something was blocking him mentally when he'd walk out in the room. He's beaten the best. You get him out on the mat, and it's like, who is this guy?
Fear of success.
I don't know.
If I do this well, I'm going to be asked to repeat it. Then everybody's going to really see me.
Yeah.
If I can slapdick this together for a while and get my hardship, then people go, hey, man, that's okay. And that makes the joy that they bring me later more palatable.
Good. I like that. Now how do we coach it?
I walk off the mat when I know he's not giving 100%. Hmm. I did 2 weekends ago at a tournament. Some guy looked up at the clock. I got out of my seat and I walked out of the gym.
Yeah. And did you talk to the kid?
Of course I did.
Afterwards?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's all about communication.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at that clock, you're letting an arena know I'm tired, I'm bored, and it's impossible because you're not done eating.
Mm-hmm.
That's a gazelle out in front of you flopping around. And you got to do what the clock does. Keep going. The clock just keeps going.
Right.
You'll know when it's over.
Yeah, the whistle blows.
I had a girl this weekend who's fantastic. She's just turned 15. She's a freshman at a freestyle tournament. She's been studying freestyle 1 month. She goes out, gets headlocked in 20 seconds, and she's a headlock machine.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I remember, this is why I came to this tournament with Coach Aldo to help him on this one person here, was the other girl gets her hand raised, and right when she turns, I go, best case scenario. I love it. I love it. I love it. Let's go. Best case scenario. Got pinned using your own move. Let's get every other gazelle in the gym. Because otherwise she just would have...
Yeah.
It's that... we could. You and I could totally do it. There's a business here.
There is.
And I'm not joking at all.
No, I believe it. If we could figure out a way to turn that on or...
We can.
Put that into a kid's head. We've got
to
figure a way
for them to come see us. If you got a kid... And you want them to unlock their potential, send them to me and Scott, and we're not kidding at all. I'm not. 100% success or you don't pay. But it's a lot.
It is a lot.
$40,000 a kid, what are we charging?
Nothing.
No, I'm not doing it for nothing. I do it. I'm giving with conditions here. There's money to be made. You said think about how rich we would be.
We would, yeah. If you could can it and drink it or I don't know.
$2,200 a kid.
Yeah.
But they get 100% of our attention. I'm not kidding. More stories, 3737@gmail.com. Let's talk about Bubba here. By the way, True Car, I need a new vehicle. I'm going to use True Car like I did the first time. True Car users like myself save, on average, over $3,000 off MSRP. You know what that stands for?
That's the sticker price, isn't it?
Sticker price. MSRP.
Well, I don't know the acronym.
Sticker price. Manufacturers suggested... Retail price.
Oh.
That's what they say. It is the sticker price. You were right. Yeah. I was being a jerk.
That's okay.
But that's what they suggest you pay, and you just go in and go, give me a little deal? Yeah. I can't. No, you can, you jerk. That's what you suggested I pay, and all the money's for like maintenance before I even got here. True Car, you will save over $3,000 off MSRP, and that's on average. There are over 1 million used cars. That's what I recommend for this audience. Get yourself a vehicle with like 1,000 miles on it. Watch that price just drop. It's nice. Certified dealers True Car has waiting for you. Guaranteed savings. Never overpay. How about that? You save some money. Put it back in your pocket. And go buy Scott Glab's book, A Saint in the City. Or give 10 bucks at your local wrestling tournament. See what all the fuss is about and why we're so damn passionate about this. True Car, my friends. Bubba. The letters at the end I can't get into because I'll start crying, but I will go into Bubba. Who you said is your second most troubled wrestler you've ever had, which is hard to believe. And you started with a quote from James Gordon, a Harvard-educated psychiatrist. It's not that some people have willpower and some don't. It's that some people are ready to change and others are not.
Right.
I wrote immediately, that's the job. But then I realized talking to you, in your book, everyone changed on their time.
Right.
Why isn't that guy sober? He's not ready. You don't know what it means. Then they get sober, you go, oh, he got it.
Yeah.
So these guys do get it on their own. They do have the ability to change.
And for somebody like him who showed up every day and liked to compete, you would think that he would have made a change somewhere down the line, especially going into his senior year.
Can I say his name on the air?
Yeah, sure.
Alfonso Perez, Bubba the Unredeemable, is how the chapter starts. Redemption to be saved from sin or error. This guy, for all intents and purposes, was a fucking maniac.
He was. He was the only kid I was, and he's going to find out now, but the only kid I was really ever scared of. I don't know if I mentioned that.
You write about it in the book, and you said you've never shared this with anybody except for 40,000 people that bought your book.
Yeah.
Like, you actually were afraid of a student.
Yes, because he grew up in Mexico fighting, and that's all he would do. And the thing, when he would fight, he'd cold cock people. He'd just come in the wrestling room.
So he was a coward.
Well, could have been. He was.
Oh, you know I love you, dude.
Yeah. He might come driving down looking for us.
¿Qué pasó?
Yeah, he just would cold cock people. And he didn't ask any questions. If you pissed him off, he'd just come up and punch you. And so, yeah, he was a fighter. He was a mean kid. But what I loved about him is he knew how to compete. When it was time to win a match, he knew how to compete and win a match for us. But one time in the wrestling room, he was standing around talking. And I said, Bubba, start drilling. And he flipped me off and said, F you, Glab. And I just turned away and just started talking to the assistant coach. So what's next on the plan for today, coach? I just kind of ignored him. Where 99% of the coaches would have confronted him, threw him off the team, you're done. And got knocked out. Yeah, and probably got knocked out. He wouldn't have cared.
5'6", 180
He wouldn't have cared who you are, whether it had kept him in school or not. He would have punched you.
He says, just go after yourself, and you go, you know, I thought this was off-white. It's eggshell. This wall is eggshell. It's not off-white at all.
Yeah.
However, for you, Roy, making the right decisions as a kid was not difficult for me. However, for some kids I coach, it is. And I have to remind myself, when they don't change, when they still screw up, when they cause me sleepless nights and heartache, I can't take it personal. One wrestler I struggled to help change was Bubba.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong crowd, trouble around every corner. You write about living in Mexico where he was fighting men for money.
That's the story, like a 15-year-old kid. Yeah.
And he's a barroom brawler, like Kimbo Slice.
Right.
In Mexico.
Yeah.
Like,
his parents sent him there because they couldn't handle him.
At 5'6", 180 all in his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Very sloppy style and technique, you write. Mm-hmm. He made up for it with intensity and aggressiveness. He was relentless, pursued his opponent like a lion, pouncing on its prey, explosive and angry personality, constantly embroiled in fights.
Yes.
Irrespective whether it was an opponent or a teammate. He was the only student I was actually afraid of, although I never revealed that fear ever until this writing. He was volatile. I never knew when he would fly off the handle. I believed he would have kicked my butt if he had the chance.
Yep. He would have.
This is my favorite chapter in the entire book.
I was going to ask you that question. What's your favorite chapter? That's cool.
Bubba Alfonso Perez. And Bubba, for real, like, I'd love to talk to you on this podcast, dude, because you fascinate me. I'm not joking at all. He was disqualified several times during wrestling matches for biting.
Biting, punching.
Headbutting.
Yes,
and general fighting. And on one occasion, dancing.
Yes.
Explain.
Okay, so he headbutted a kid in this match.
It takes two to make a thing go right. Get out.
He headbutts a kid in this match. He gets dinged a point. It's unsportsmanlike conduct. The kid gets a point. Headbutts him again. Kid gets another point. So he decided that he was going to do like this little twist, like a chubby checker twist. I'm watching him twist out there, and then he just takes his right arm and takes a swing at the kid and misses, and then that's it, disqualified.
So when in the match does he do, like, when the ref goes up or top or bottom or defer?
No, this was in the middle. This was like after he stopped him for headbutting.
I thought you say in the middle of the actual action.
Well, it was after they said, hey, you know, they blow the whistle, beep, stop, timeout, okay, 1 point, other guy, you know, you're headbutting. And so it was after that, and they were on their feet.
It's the point deduction dance.
It was and then disqualified and out the next match, which was a big match for us. But we still pulled it off without him, yeah.
Chubby checker twist and then swings at the opponent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that he was afraid of the opponent? I don't know the answer to this.
I think he was angry. I think maybe he might have been behind.
Angry people don't do the twist.
Yeah, well, I don't know. He's a little different.
You say a little behind on points?
He could have been. To be honest with you, I can't remember.
There's too much facts that are fascinating. You don't do.
But usually, Bubba, when he's behind, he'd start headbutting. He'd start doing things that were kind of illegal during the match. I mean, I saw him bite a kid in the thigh one time. In the thigh. That's a real sensitive area.
During the match?
During the match.
Mm-hmm. And what happened?
Disqualified.
And the next day of practice, was he allowed in the room? Yes or no?
Probably.
No. Yeah, the answer is yes.
I'm sure he was.
Yeah. Well, this is why this chapter really stuck out to me. Because Bubba always had a home in that room.
He did. And he'd always show up. That's what's funny about some of these kids. As mean and tough or bad as they were, they kept coming back.
Yeah, because everybody else told them to get lost.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
One day, Bubba and another thug on the team got into a fight with some local gangbangers. They returned to the wrestling room after school, bragging about how they beat the heck out of them.
Mm-hmm.
On the back of Bubba's head was a 3-inch gash where he was stabbed with a screwdriver, but he was unfazed.
Laughing about it. They were in there bragging to the rest of the guys, and I see this big gash on the back of his head, and I'm just going, no way.
Outside of his bad boy exterior, there was a part of him I did like. What were his redeeming qualities? Right now, explain Bubba to me why you love him.
Because he's, like I said before, he showed up every day. He,
attendance isn't a reason to love somebody.
Yeah, but he put in the effort. His sophomore year, I saw a big change. He went from 189 to 145. He cut all that weight, got down there, did real well, won a league title, didn't place at CIF. I think maybe that discouraged him a little bit, but there was a part of him that really wanted to be a good wrestler. You could see that he really wanted to be a great wrestler, but there's the streets and there's the friends calling his name. And I think I mentioned in there, he told me later that you can't have one foot in wrestling and you can't have another foot in the social life. And you know, as wrestling,
you can't have one foot in the street either.
Yeah, you gotta either be one or the other, and that might be a reason why a lot of kids quit, because those friends and the streets and that life in Santa Ana pulls kids away. And kids don't want to miss out on being a kid and having fun and hanging out with their friends.
Why did you not kick him off the team?
Well,
he bit a guy in the thigh, he took a swing at a guy, he got in a fist fight on the mat.
I know a lot of coaches out there who are listening are going to go.
No. I don't care about them because your answer is the truth.
Because I was trying to save him. I was hoping that like I said, I was hoping that he would kind of redeem himself and turn things around. There was that part of me.
Without that room.
Mm-hmm, that wanted to see this kid change.
Without that room, his chances for redemption.
Probably slim to none because some of the kids.
None just left town, yeah.
Yeah, some of the kids that were not as bad as Bubba but got themselves in trouble and like to fight that didn't stick around, they aren't around.
It's been over 20 years since he wrestled for you, and you write that you asked him, why did you have difficulties giving wrestling 100%? His answer, during that time I was wrestling, I knew I wanted to do it. However, I was not completely focused on it because I was not willing to sacrifice time for my social life. You can't have both an active social life and wrestling. If you want it bad enough and you're willing to put forth the effort, wrestling will change your life.
Mm-hmm.
This answer in of itself shows me it did change his life when he didn't give 100. This answer is awareness of a guy whose life was changed by wrestling.
And he still keeps in touch with me, and he does say wrestling changed his life. It didn't seem like it at the time, but I guess the things he learned from it, he's using now, and I don't think he's going out and doing those things he was doing in high school.
Bubba says, till this day, I give credit to wrestling and you for making me the man I am today.
Yeah.
I got to think more than your wrestling Hall of Fame. That sentence was like being handed a wheelbarrow full of bricks all at once.
Mm-hmm.
In the positive, somehow.
Yeah.
I'm going to read some words to you. Demon. Anger, ugly, spectacle, aggressive, rage. I was afraid, volatile, continuous grief, unpredictable, pins and needles, overwhelming, fury, disturbance. I was afraid of him. I sat on edge.
Yeah.
That's Bubba.
It is.
And you kept letting him in. Because Bubba's your dad. Mm. Bubba represents your dad here.
Hmm.
The fact that you didn't... You don't know this already fascinates me.
Yeah.
This is a guy that had such anger.
Oh, he was like, yeah.
And you
okay,
could
he's
reach
like
him
my dad.
Because he couldn't come sit. No,
right.
He's not your dad.
I know, but he has the same.
Yeah, trait, I'm your father.
The characteristics.
And he didn't ever sit on the edge of your bed and make you feel less than. He made you feel more than just by showing up.
Mm-hmm.
But demon anger. Ugly spectacle, aggressiveness, pins and needles, overwhelming. I was afraid, volatile. I was afraid of continuous grief. Mm-hmm. You're describing your childhood.
True. Yeah, you're right.
And it's a beautiful thing, Coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That you kept going again and again and again, like you would to a father, like you would to a son.
True.
Because I was enraged that this guy was left on the team over and over and over. And then I went, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
He really treats all these kids like they are his actual son.
I try to.
No, you do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, we're way past trying here. Mm-hmm. You do. You got your state champion. You bounced.
Yeah. That was nice.
Who was somebody that far exceeded your expectations that maybe isn't even in the book?
Oh, there's quite a few kids. There are kids that, man, some kids come in that room, and it's just like you look at them, and you go, you have no chance. You don't ever say it, but you think in your head, man, this kid has absolutely nothing.
Let's go step by step here. Okay.
No talent. Yeah. And then, lo and behold, they win CIF and find a way to get to the state meet, and some of them possibly even place there. So you can't predict. All those kids that walk into that room, you just don't know who's going to blossom, who's going to take that sport and run with it. And it seems like it's usually the kids that they're not really overly talented, because the really talented kids that walk in there and have it that first day, they never make it.
You don't see him four years
down the road. You see this kid that was a skinny little 112 pounder all of a sudden has grown into this, you know, good looking 138 pounder, and going, and he just worked hard, and he fell in love with the sport. And
if you think you can predict who's going to be good at wrestling, just go there when all the football players show up.
Yeah,
because they don't come back.
No,
the ones that do, I'm going to tell everybody this as a fact: the football scholarships are in the wrestling room.
Yeah.
They're not out in the football field where everybody's standing around during special teams, offense or defense. You get an offensive lineman or a linebacker or a defensive end and run. I don't care what position. You put him in that wrestling room and he does a full season again and again.
Right.
Nobody's going to fuck with that kid on the football field.
And that's what I wish football coaches would understand, is that a lot of – I met Jackie Slater. You know who he is.
What in the world? Can we please have some quiet on the set, Jay Moore? I want to put the rubber to the road.
I met Jackie Slater at an FCA banquet, and he coaches football at Azusa Pacific, and he asked me, do you have any wrestlers that play football? These coaches are looking for multi-sport football players. That's what they're looking for. But the high school coaches are so caught up in win, win, win. I don't want to lose a kid to wrestling because they might stay in wrestling or they might not come back. A good football player is going to come back. The good football players I had, they stayed in football, and they wrestled, and they did well at both.
I just
wish they would kind of get over that.
Well, there's football coaches listening to this right now, and I'm telling you, I think Coach Scott Glab agrees with me. You should, when you say your prayers tonight, go and please have everybody try out for wrestling and just stay the entire year, and you'll be astounded by what happens on the field the next
year.
You're going to get out-leveraged. Like, nobody can knock you over. Nobody on that street can run up on you and make you sit on your ass unless, you know, they crack you in the face when you're not looking.
Yeah.
Nobody. So you're going to tell me some, like, guy's going to come through the A-gap and knock me up? No. No way. This is a great book, man. I'm so happy you're on the podcast. A Saint in the City.
Thank you.
And, I'm grateful for your wife, Andrea, and your two boys. I'm just grateful I met you, man. Everybody go out and buy this book. And I agree with you that it is a skill that can be taught. And I think
mental toughness.
I think it's almost like a rediscovery. Like, if I could teach mental toughness, it's like, no, if I could just remove the curtain on the middle of the living room and go, no, this is an actual mindset that happens in here. It's like the transformation. Information without transformation is no good.
Yeah.
So you learn all the moves, and unless you have that, this guy wants to pin me. No.
Right.
You know, I didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have it as adults. When you're done with wrestling, it's weird how long it stays with us.
Yeah, it does.
It's a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
It changed your life. You've changed my life in the short time I've known you. I've known you 6 months. And,
Nice.
I just want to be a better coach, better coach, better coach.
Mm-hmm.
And Corey asked me on the phone, like, why do you necessarily, like, what's the end game here, to coach with this person or over there as an assistant or this? And I went, just to be alongside the best.
Yeah.
You know, to just soak it up. Yeah. And I never felt that way about anything.
Really?
If I could just go to college and just learn a whole bunch of stuff, that'd be great.
Uh-huh.
If I really learned from the best teachers, like, no. If I could just work with the best headliners. No, I'm the headliner.
Yeah. But did you ever work along somebody when you're up and coming, a really good comedian that kind of helped you along the way?
Yeah. I mean, but I sought it out because it was money and it was a stepladder type of thing. And then, you know, not long after the fact, you go, oh, that person put indelible marks on my canvas that'll never go away.
Yeah.
Don't say on stage. Don't say anyway.
Yeah.
Because it negates what you just said as being unimportant. Don't say what else. They don't know what else. Mm-hmm. That's one guy that you don't even know who he is. He's an open micer. Mm-hmm. That I thought was a headlining God guitar act in Jersey. You know, Buddy Hackett, like everything he told me. But I didn't seek these people out. This is the first time I went, I need to be more full of this. And guys like you, man. A Saint in the City. You guys go buy this book and email me. And you guys got my personal email that do and text, you know who you are, your take on the book so I can pass it along to Coach Scott. Scott Glabb, G-L-A-B-B. And I know one thing about books. When it says second edition, ooh, Lordy, that means they had to start over again because they sold out all damn books. I don't know what that's like personally. It
just means I added some chapters. We have girls wrestling. That's taken off.
When you talk about when you let the good in and just realize you're on your second printing of a book.
So I just added chapters. We had two girls that win state titles, and I wanted to include girls in this chapter so it would be more appealing in this book.
I'm very glad you did because that's been the most motivating thing for me personally is watching girls. I was at a tournament, I told you, down in Whittier. It wasn't at the high school, it was at Rio Hondo.
Oh, Rio Hondo, yeah.
Community there college. Was eight-year-old girls wrestling eight-year-old girls. And I went, these girls will never get ranked. Mm-mm. Ever. No one will ever at a party in college pin them down against, like, no. You're too high, asshole. You know what I mean?
Bridge out of it, yeah.
Like, this is where the sport's going, and I love it.
Yeah.
It's
women's wrestling's exploding across the country.
Yeah.
It really is.
You got a girl at home, put her in the wrestling room, and guys like Coach Scott and myself will fight for them to be able to wrestle. If you're in the room doing the work, you wrestle, that's that.
Yeah.
There's no favoritism, and that's why it's the greatest sport in the world. My man, I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Scott Glabb. Go buy this book, A Saint in the City, Scott Glabb, G-L-A-B-B. Are you on Twitter or anything?
Santa Ana Wrestling, at Santa Ana Wrestling, and then...
But you're not, because you have a soul.
It's just, there's so much social media out there, it's hard for me to keep up with everything. Facebook, A Saint in the City.
Okay.
And my name.
Hit him up, folks. My man, I love you, brother.
No, thank you.
Anytime, any place. Mm-hmm. I texted it to you, but I never said it to your face.
I know. I appreciate that.
That's my word.
Okay? All right.
Put your name on it, friends. Put your name on it.